Now, for those of you who may be listening for the first time, this is Sabbath Food, Part 7. Okay, it's a big subject, and for those of you who've been with us from the beginning, I hope you're not getting fed up with it, because I believe that God has scattered the mentions of this all the way through His written word for good reason, and He wants us to take notice of what He says here. So, this is Sabbath Food Part 7. Now, last month I promised you that this month we'd get into the Sabbath food scriptures in the book of Nehemiah, and we're going to do that. But before we get there, now Nehemiah wrote after Judah's return from exile in Babylon, and you probably all know that. So before we go there, let's take two pre-exile looks at why God gave Israel and Judah into captivity, one from Jeremiah and the first one now from Isaiah. So please turn right away to Isaiah chapter 1. Again, we've looked at this, we've touched on this as we've been going through the various reasons why God did this and caused these captivities. But I want to go into that in a little bit more detail now before we go into Nehemiah. Isaiah chapter 1 and verse 1. The vision of Isaiah the son of Amoz, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. Hear, O heavens, and give ear, O earth, for the Eternal has spoken. I have nourished and brought up children, and they have rebelled against me. Please jump down to verse 8. And the daughter of Zion is left as a cottage in a vineyard, as a lodge in a garden of cucumbers, as a besieged city. Except the Eternal of hosts had left unto us a very small remnant, we, that is Judah especially, but Israel as well, should have been as Sodom, and we should have been like unto Gomorrah. In other words, torched and obliterated as those cities were. Verse 10. Hear the word of the Eternal, you rulers of Sodom, and give ear unto the law of our God, ye people of Gomorrah. Of course, Sodom and Gomorrah were virtually gone. And right here he's actually talking to the leaders and the people of Israel and Judah, who had been acting like the leaders and people of Sodom and Gomorrah, and thus deserving of the same punishment. Verse 11. To what purpose is the multitude of your sacrifices unto me, says the Eternal? I am full of the burnt offerings of rams and the fat of fed beasts, and I delight not in the blood of bullocks, or of lambs, or of he-goats. So Yahweh was telling him here that their thousands and even millions of offerings and sacrifices were no use to him. They were intended for their benefit, for the people's benefit. Verse 12, when you come to appear before me, who has required this at your hand to tread my courts? God saying, who asked you, unrepentant sinners, to come before me in my temple? He doesn't want that. If they're going to continue with that stuff, he doesn't want them near him. He doesn't want them desecrating his holy temple. Verse 13, bring no more vain oblations. Incense is an abomination unto me. The new moons and Sabbaths, the calling of assemblies, I cannot away with. It is iniquity, even the solemn meeting. Your new moons and your appointed feasts my soul hates. They are a trouble unto me. I am weary to bear them. So he's saying, the Sabbaths, the new moons, the feast days, the oblations, the assemblies, and the solemn meetings, well, they're all okay, of course. They're all good and right, but not vain ones.
No.
And not when coincident with ongoing, unabashed iniquity. They can't go together. And that has to stop. Verse 15. And when you spread forth your hands, I will hide my eyes from you. Yes, when you make many prayers, I will not hear. Your hands are full of blood. Now it's likely that some brethren will quote these verses and they'll claim, well, this is where Yahweh cancelled his requirement for us to keep his Sabbaths in the holy days. But that, we know that that's not true. The mention of their hands being full of blood in verse 15 gives us an inkling of what he was meaning here. And another inkling is in the more modern translations of verse 13. There is one from, just one from the King James Version is not a very good translation of verse 13. So here it is from the New King James. Bring no more futile sacrifices. Incense is an abomination to me, the new moons, the Sabbaths, and the calling of assemblies. And is what matters here. I cannot endure iniquity and the sacred meeting. So again, the two cannot go. Sin is one thing, and hypocrisy is another thing. Sin, unrepentant sinners will be dealt with. God will deal with them later in the second resurrection. And those who don't know. Right? But there's one thing that the eternal cannot endure, brethren, and that is hypocrisy. He cannot endure professing Christians pretending to be righteous when they continue with their unrighteous ways. Supposedly keeping, on the surface, keeping God's Sabbaths and holy days while the old iniquity continues. But when you've got time, in your own time, do a search. If you have a Bible concordance or a computer Bible, do a search on the words hypocrite and hypocrisy and see how many times that it's brought up. And the way it's brought up, both Old Testament and New Testament as well. I found 40 mentions of those two words, and again applying both to Old Testament physical Israel and the New Testament Israel of God. Interesting study. How can we know that the Lord still wanted his people to respect and keep his Sabbaths unpolluted, despite what we just read in Isaiah chapter 1? Well, Isaiah comes back to it again, all the way down in chapter 56. So let's go all the way down to Isaiah chapter 56. Isaiah chapter 56 and verse 1. Isaiah 56 verse 1. Thus says the Eternal, keep you judgment and do justice, for my salvation is near to come. Am I in the right place? Yeah. Alright. Thus says the Eternal, keep you judgment and do justice, for my salvation is near to come, and my righteousness to be revealed. Blessed is the man that does this, and the son of man that lays hold on it. Here we go. That keeps the Sabbath from polluting it, and keeps his hand from doing any evil. Neither let the son of the stranger, and the Hebrew word means foreigner or Gentile, neither let the son of the stranger that has joined himself to the Eternal speak, saying, the Eternal has utterly separated me from his people. Because I'm a Gentile, I've got no part, he's saying. Neither let the eunuch say, behold, I am a dry tree. For thus says the Eternal, unto the eunuchs that keep my Sabbaths, and choose the things that please me, and take hold of my covenant. Even unto them will I give in my house and within my walls a place and a name better than of sons and of daughters. I will give them an everlasting name that shall not be cut off. which is kind of interesting play on words for a eunuch. Verse 6, also the sons of the stranger, again the foreigner or the Gentiles, that join themselves to the Eternal, to serve Him and to love the name of the Eternal, to be His servants, everyone that keeps the Sabbath from polluting it and takes hold of My covenant. Even them will I bring to My holy mountain and make them joyful in My house of prayer. Their burnt offerings and their sacrifices shall be accepted upon My altar, for My house shall be called a house of prayer for all people, both Israelites and Gentiles too, if they will keep God's Sabbath and His laws. Even Gentiles, even eunuchs, they were promised, God promised them that they would be richly blessed if they kept the Eternal Sabbath as He commanded them to be kept. And so we ask the question, still in Isaiah, how are they to be kept? Okay, let's still in Isaiah now, let's go to chapter 58. Isaiah chapter 58. Isaiah chapter 58 and verse 13, please. Isaiah 58 verse 13. If you turn away your foot from the Sabbath, not from keeping it, if you turn away from your foot from the Sabbath from doing your pleasure, and the Hebrew word can also be translated as delight here, the holy of the Eternal, honorable, and shall honor Him, not doing your own ways, nor finding your own pleasure, nor speaking your own words, then shall you delight yourself in the Eternal, and I will cause you to ride upon the high places of the earth, and feed you with the heritage of Jacob your father, for the mouth of the Eternal has spoken it. So we ask the question then, What is your pleasure? What is your pleasure? What is your pleasure, for instance, from the first day of the week to the sixth day of the week? What does it include? What is it in your home? What is your pleasure in the living space that you have the authority over? Because that's all we can do, isn't it? We can't go out there and tell the people of the cul-de-sac here, hey, you should be keeping the Sabbath, you know. And we shouldn't, and we can't even tell our fellow brethren, as the Apostle Paul tells us, we can't go and we can't command them to keep the Sabbath exactly the way we do. Okay. But God gives us the instructions, and we have to get them, and we have to follow them to the best of our ability. And not just our ability, but the Holy Spirit that is within us. So, the Eternal clearly commands here that one's pleasure on the seventh day of the week must be different from that on the other 6 days. Okay? Now let's move over to Jeremiah. And Jeremiah's pre-exile warnings to the Jewish people and their rulers. But actually, everybody looks at Jeremiah's book as being a real downer, but these are not just warnings. He repeats instructions here that they should already know, and we should already know. And he clearly offers them, or passes on the offer from God, of blessings if we obey them, if the Israelites, if the Jews would obey them. And yes, warnings of what would happen, the curses for disobeying them. But it wasn't all downer stuff, okay? I want you to notice as we go through here as well, something that jumped out at me. There's quite an accent on the city gates of Jerusalem in here, which is kind of interesting. Because this gets, as we go into Nehemiah, you'll see that this is significant. But Jeremiah mentions it a lot too. I'll shout it out as I come to the word gates here. Jeremiah chapter 17, please. Jeremiah chapter 17. Jeremiah chapter 17 and verse 19. Jeremiah 17, 19. Thus said the Eternal unto me, Go, and me is obviously Jeremiah, go and stand in the gate, there it is, of the children of the people, whereby the kings of Judah come in, and by which they go out, and in all the gates of Jerusalem. All the gates of Jerusalem. Verse 20, And say unto them, Hear you the word of the Eternal, you kings of Judah, and all Judah, and all the inhabitants of Jerusalem that enter in by these gates. Thus says the Eternal, Take heed to yourselves, and bear no burden on the Sabbath day, nor bring it in by the gates of Jerusalem. Neither carry forth a burden out of your houses on the Sabbath day, neither do you any work. And there's that old word malacha that we've come across throughout this. Neither do you any work, but hallow you the Sabbath day, as I commanded your fathers. Okay, when you notice that, because Yahweh had made no changes to the Sabbath laws since Sinai, or actually going all the way back to creation. As I commanded your fathers, that's how we're supposed to keep, that's how they were supposed to keep the Sabbath, that's how we are too. Okay, verse 23. But they obeyed not, neither inclined their ear, but made their neck stiff, that they might not hear nor receive instruction. And they always think of little kids there when they go, la la la, you know, and they don't want to listen to what you say because they don't want to obey you. Brethren, are we happily and willingly receiving and inclining our ears to his instructions? Are we listening out for it, specifically concerning his Sabbaths, through his holy written word? Or are any of us being disobedient to God's Sabbath laws? Are any of us plugging our ears so that we can't listen? Are any of us to be included with the stiff-necked Jews and other Israelites? We certainly don't want to be included in that way. Verse 24, And it shall come to pass, if you diligently hearken unto me, says the Eternal, to bring in no burden through the gates of the city on the Sabbath day, but hallow the Sabbath day. And the word for hallow again is kadash. Hallow the Sabbath day, to do no work, no malacha therein. Then shall there enter into, listen to this now, this promise. Then shall there enter into the gates of the city kings and princes sitting upon the throne of David, riding in chariots and on horses, they and their princes, the men of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And this city shall remain forever. And they shall come from the cities of Judah and from the places about Jerusalem and from the land of Benjamin and from the plain and from the mountains and from the south. Bringing, look at this. What are they doing here? They're carrying a burden here. But look what it is: bringing burnt offerings and sacrifices and meat offerings and incense, and bringing sacrifices of praise unto the house of the Eternal. So, as we saw last month in the sermon, bringing this kind of thing into Jerusalem, to the temple, would be good and right and acceptable kinds of burden to be brought into the city, and again to be offered at the temple specifically by God's people in a selfless desire to worship him, and not by selfish Gentile merchants who are just interested in lining their own pockets at their expense of the wayward Jews. And that's what we're going to see when we get to Nehemiah. Verse 27, But if you will not hearken unto me to hallow the Sabbath day, and not to bear a burden, even entering in at the gates of Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. Then will I kindle a fire, remember kindling a fire, in the gates thereof, and it shall devour the palaces of Jerusalem, and it shall not be quenched. So there's the choice. Now, it's kind of interesting that God would inspire Jeremiah to write here about the kindling of a fire and tie it here with the bringing in of unapproved burdens on his Sabbath days. A few months ago, if you remember, we looked at this. We looked at Yahweh's prohibition against the collection of firewood on God's holy Sabbaths and the kindling of fires on the Sabbath days. Now, what I'm saying here, when I see it mentioned again, because it's not something that the kindling of fires is not something that you see very often throughout the Bible, but I'm wondering if perhaps that the kindling of fires is coincident with these markets or that were being held on God's Sabbath, that the selling, the shopping that was being done. I'm not sure. Perhaps for the cooking of food in the market cafes, and we'll come to that in a minute. Now, I was going to tell you something else, but I'm going to defer that to later on. Okay. Please keep all of this in mind now as we go into the book of Nehemiah. The books of the Bible are terribly mixed up. And you got Nehemiah, Ezra and Nehemiah, who wrote after the exile. Their books are way back there, way on back. Hang on a sec, let's see, I can't even find them. There we go. Ezra and Nehemiah. All the way back to Nehemiah now. But again, don't let that fool you into thinking that, just remember that Nehemiah wrote way after the exile. So we're going to, from Jeremiah, where he wrote here, we're going to fast forward now over 80 years, actually, 83 years, I believe it was, to the time that was following the Jews' return from their captivity in Babylon. So now, Ezra the priest returned to Jerusalem with an advance party of Jews, actually 13 years before Nehemiah arrived there. It's kind of interesting. Now, so a new temple had been built, and we know that it was not a very impressive one at that time. It was pretty, from what we understand, it was pretty makeshift when we compare it with Solomon's original. And now, the construction of a new city wall had been initiated, and that was very important to them. Very important to all of the cities of that time was to be fortified for protection. Okay, so please go to Nehemiah chapter 4, and we're going to go through a couple of different significant chapters in the book of Nehemiah. Nehemiah chapter 4, and starting in verse 6. So we built the wall. It's Nehemiah writing kind of a diary on what happened here. So we built the wall, and all the wall was joined together unto the half thereof, for, look what it says here, the people had a mind to work. The people had a mind to work. Now, if we go into the history of it, we find that the people previously, they built the temple, but previously they seem to have fallen into like a lethargic mood, almost like a funk. And perhaps this was due to the ongoing opposition of some Gentiles to the Jewish building projects. They kept moaning about it. But now, with the infectious courage and the zeal of Nehemiah, the people had a mind to work, and work they did on this new city wall. Verse 7, but it came to pass that when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabians and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the walls of Jerusalem were made up and that the breaches began to be stopped, then they were very wroth, they were angry, and conspired all of them together to come and to fight against Jerusalem and to hinder it. It's kind of interesting what we read here. It's interesting that these wicked Gentiles who were enemies of the Jews, they were hindering the Jews from performing the righteous commanded work, which was being done obviously on the six non-Sabbath days of the week, of course. Because later we'll see more Gentiles who are encouraging the Jews to approve of and to participate in forbidden and unrighteous work on the seventh day of the week. But it's kind of, you know, when you think about this and you think about the what was happening here, I find it really interesting. Okay, jump down to verse 11. And our adversaries said, they shall not know near the sea till we come in the midst among them and slay them and cause the work to cease. And that's interesting too, because the word cease there is Shabbat. But God did not let the Gentiles succeed, and the Malacca continued. Verse 15. And it came to pass, when our enemies heard that it was known unto us, they twigged to the plan here, and God had brought their counsel to naught, that we returned all of us to the wall, every one unto his work. Okay, let's go down now to chapter 6, where these same wicked Gentiles then tried some time-wasting tactics on the zealous Nehemiah, and even they wanted to do him harm. Nehemiah found out that they wanted to do him harm in order to get his godly influence out of the way, but again they were unsuccessful. Nehemiah chapter 6 and verse 1. Now it came to pass when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem the Arabian and the rest of our enemies heard that I had builded the wall and that there was no breach left therein, though at that time I had not set up the doors upon the gates, remember Jeremiah's gates, that Sanballat and Geshem sent unto me, saying, come, let us meet together in some one of the villages in the plain of Ono. But they thought to do me mischief. So he knew that there was a plan there to get him out the way. And I sent messengers unto them, and he didn't pull any punches, saying, I am doing a great work, so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease? Or Shabbat. Why should the work cease whilst I leave it and come down to you? So the 2 points here were that the Jews were engaging themselves in a proper godly work during the 6 days, first 6 days of the week, and that the Gentile enemies were conspiring to prevent it. Okay, again, please keep all this in mind. All the information builds up as we go through. Now chapters 9 through 13. Okay. Now last month in part 6 of our study here, we read about the northern house of Israel being sent into captivity and scattering. Again, partially because of the breaking of God's Sabbath commands concerning the weekly, annual and land Sabbaths. And then we read about the southern tribe of Judah being sent into captivity in Babylon for the very same sins. But again, we have to remember that God warned them first. God is a merciful God, And he gave them these warnings in advance. And not just through one prophet. I just touched today on Isaiah and Jeremiah, but there were lots of others too in that time frame. Now, let's go over to Nehemiah chapter 9, please. Nehemiah chapter 9. We're going to read here about some Jewish exiles who returned from captivity in Babylon. And these men seem to have learned the lessons, at least initially, seem to have learned the lessons from God that God had intended to teach them by the captivity. Like, you know, a little child being punished. And you know, hopefully they get the point, and you know, they don't do that, they don't commit that infraction in the future. Okay, Nehemiah chapter 9 and verse 1. Now, in the 24th day of this month, and this month was the seventh month, which was Tishri, the children of Israel were assembled with fasting and with sackcloth and earth upon them. Now this was a special fast day and a special assembly, and it was on the 24th day of Tishri, it says here. And if you think about that, it's almost immediately following the Feast of Tabernacles in the last great day, which as always ran from the 15th to the 22nd. So they had a day off on the 23rd, and they were all still there. So Nehemiah took advantage of that while they were all still together to have this very special fast day and assembly on the 20th day, on the 24th day. Now, just a note on that, amazingly, that this feast that they just kept was the first full and proper keeping of the feast since the time of Joshua. Read about that in Nehemiah chapter 8. Don't have to go there now. Okay, still here in chapter 9, let's go to verse 2. And the seed of Israel separated themselves from all strangers, foreigners, Gentiles, and stood and confessed their sins and the iniquities of their fathers. So again, the purpose of this fast day was a day of confession and repentance of their own sins and the sins of their forefathers, and specifically those who had been the cause of the Babylonian captivity. Jump down to verse 5. Then the Levites, Jeshua, Kadmiel, and Bani, Hashabniah, Sherebiah, Hodijah, Shebaniah, and Pethahiah said, "Stand up and bless the Eternal your God forever and ever." And also say, "Blessed be your glorious name, which is exalted above all blessing and praise." Now, if we read on, we're not going to do that. If we read on through from verse 6 through verse 12, these same eight men that just couldn't pronounce there, they continue their humble prayer. And in that prayer, they give kind of a potted summary, a potted history of the important events from the creation all the way up until the Israelites arriving at Sinai. So then, in verse 13, and they're still praying, okay, verse 13, "You, Yahweh, came down also upon Mount Sinai and spoke with them from heaven and gave them," look what he gave them, "right judgments and true laws, good statutes and commandments. Please, brethren, remember," if you don't remember anything else from this sermon, remember that verse, and that God's statutes and laws and commandments are good. So if those judgments and laws and statutes and commandments were right and true and good all the way back down at Sinai, have they somehow changed since then? Have they been downgraded? And if so, who downgraded them and when? And if they've been downgraded, where is that important event recorded? I'm going to ask the same questions a couple of times as we go through. Because in the same way as it applied to the Jews back then, brethren, it applies doubly so to God's people today, on whom the ends of the world are come. Now, this gets interesting. In verse 14, before we read it, ask a question. Of all of these right judgments and true laws and good statutes and commandments, which one did these men specifically home in on their prayer of contrition? Verse 14, look what it says. And made known unto them your holy Sabbath, and commanded them precepts, statutes and laws by the hand of of Moses your servant. They singled out the Sabbath commandment. And why? Because the breaking of the weekly Sabbaths, the annual Sabbaths, and the land Sabbaths were largely and even primarily to blame for the captivities of the northern and southern houses of Israel and Judah. So again, is that an appropriate warning for spiritual Israel, for God's church today? Yes, it is. Of course it is. Now let's jump all the way down to verse 38, please. Still in chapter 9, all the way down to verse 38. And because of all this, we make a sure covenant and write it, and our princes, Levites, and priests seal unto it. So the Jewish leaders here and the people actually sign off on this special covenant with Yahweh, in which they promise to take proper action on the lessons that he taught them through the 70-year captivity. So now, this covenant was kind of a partial repetition of the covenant that was made between Yahweh and the Israelites through Moses at Mount Sinai. Okay, now, it was a long list of nobles that agreed to this covenant and added their seals to it. You know what they did in those days with wax and all of that. So as we begin now, chapter 10, chapter 10 and verse 1. Now those that sealed were Nehemiah the Tirshatha, the son of Hachaliah, and Zidkijah, and it goes on and on. So the list of leaders that signed off on this goes on all the way up to verse 27. I'm not going to read it all. And then in verse 28, the people that these leaders represented also agreed to the covenant. So let's read verse 28. And the rest of the people, the priests, the Levites, the porters, the singers, the Nethinim, and all they that had separated themselves from the people of the lands unto the law of God, their wives, their sons, and their daughters, everyone having knowledge and having understanding, they clave to their brethren, their nobles, and entered into a curse and into an oath to walk in God's law, which was given by Moses, the servant of God, and to observe and do all the commandments of the Lord our God, and his judgments and his statutes. And once again, what were among the very first items that they agreed to? Just don't jump over into verse 31. And if the people of the land bring ware or any victuals, foodstuffs, on the Sabbath day to sell, that we would not buy it of them on the Sabbath or on the holy day, and that we would leave the seventh year and the exaction of every debt. So first, they promised to do no business with the Gentile merchants on a weekly or annual Sabbath. And second, they promised to keep the seventh year land Sabbath, which we discussed in quite a lot of detail last month. So did the Jewish nobles and did the Jewish people keep their promises? They made a very serious set of promises on this fast day, and they actually sealed it with a writing. Did they keep it? Let's see. Now, if we were to read all the way through chapters 11 and 12 and the beginning of chapter 13, which we won't due to time constraints, we would see that after the rejoicing and the setup, or the rejoicing after setup of the rebuilt temple and the walls, then Nehemiah seemed to be fighting a losing battle. He experienced quite a lot of ups and downs in his leadership. The leaders under him appeared to be lacking in strictness. And Nehemiah is a real sharp one. And he recognized the problems and he quickly dealt with them. But then he came face to face with the huge problem that he had to deal with. And that's what we read about in chapter 13. Let's go over to chapter 13, Nehemiah chapter 13. Nehemiah chapter 13, and we're going to start in verse 15. Nehemiah chapter 13 and verse 15. In those days saw I, Nehemiah, in Judah some treading wine presses on the Sabbath, and bringing in sheaves, and lading asses, as also wine, grapes, and figs, and all manner of burdens which they brought into Jerusalem on the Sabbath day. And I testified against them in the day wherein they sold victuals. It's hard to jump from chapter 9 and all that they promised into chapter 13, where so soon, so quickly, they were just throwing those promises out of the door. Please notice first that he saw this in Judah. And when we read this account, we tend to home our thoughts onto Jerusalem specifically. But it may have, I believe that it also was happening in other towns and villages in Judah as well. So, question. What was happening here? What was the problem? I ask this because I know that there are Christians out there today who would say, well, what's the big deal? You know, I know that the people question this as though it's no big deal. The big deal was that there was selling, there was marketing, and there was heavy work being done on God's holy Sabbath days. Some people were treading grapes for wine. Some people were bringing grain sheaves into the town or the towns. Some people were loading heavy cargo onto donkeys, all on God's holy Sabbath days. Now, in Jerusalem specifically, where Nehemiah was at the time, he witnessed wine and grapes and figs and all kinds of other goods being transported into the city, obviously for sale, again, on the Sabbath days. That's what he said there, wherein they sold victuals. Was this a problem? We've probably got thousands of our brethren who may say, that's not a problem, that was then, this is now. It was a problem, brethren. It was a problem, it certainly was. Nehemiah testified against the participants and gave them strict warnings against continuing doing these things. Okay, verse 16. There dwelt men of Tyre also therein. You have to really look into the grammar, the way it's written here. There dwelt men of Tyre also therein, which brought fish and all manner of ware, and sold on the Sabbath unto the children of Judah and in Jerusalem. Again, the word also implies here that some of the sellers may have been Jews. If we read it that way, some of the Gentile men of Tyre were residents in Judah, and they were bringing fish and all kinds of other goods into the cities to sell to the Jews. And we tend to put, when we read this, we tend to put the blame on the Tyrian merchants, right? But please note that it was the Jews who were doing the buying, right? The Tyrians were selling it, and the Jews were, you know, they were doing the buying. And the grammar of verses 15 and 16, if you go into it in more detail, implies that this was happening inside Judah, and that Jerusalem was probably just one Judean town where this was going on. Verse 17, "Then I contended with the nobles of Judah and said unto them, What evil," can you imagine them? "What are you doing? What evil thing is this that you do and profane the Sabbath day?" Nehemiah, again, he had a lot of guts. He acted right away. First, he contended not with the Tyrian sellers and not with the Jewish buyers, the regular people, but he started off by tackling the Jewish nobles, and he put the main blame squarely on their heads where it belonged. As long as the Jewish leaders were encouraging and allowing it, and the Tyrian traders obviously thought, if these guys are not strict with their religion, why shouldn't we ply our trade and make a few extra bucks? And the Jewish people thought that it was okay, that it was acceptable, that when we say, oh, that's what I was going to say, is it's possible, again, that some of the Jewish nobles were amongst those who were doing the buying as well, possibly. And the people were receiving their example from them. Monkey see, monkey do. The Gentile traders, or, you know, they would say, hey, you know, the Jews would say, the Gentile traders, they're unconverted. They don't know any better. And they're not subject to our religious laws. And they would say, surely, if our nobles do it, it must be okay. Brethren, this is exactly what's happened in spiritual Israel, in God's New Testament church. Despite God's instruction, some of today's Church of God ministers buy food and drink on the Sabbath days, in stores and in restaurants, and the members follow suit. Monkey see, monkey do. Almost exactly the same words. You've heard it. Store clerks and the restaurant employees, they're unconverted, they don't know any better, and they're not subject to our religious laws. And you say, well, surely if the minister's doing it, must be okay. But is it okay, brethren? Is it okay? Might be okay with those ministers, but is it okay with God? Let's see if it's okay with God. Let's continue where Nehemiah's dressing down. Let's continue with Nehemiah's dressing down the Jewish nobles. Verse 18. Did not your fathers thus, and did not our God bring all this evil upon us and upon this city? Yet you bring more wrath upon Israel by profaning the Sabbath. Nehemiah reminded them that this kind of Sabbath breaking was one of the main sins of their forefathers, which had caused the Eternal to send them off into captivity for 70 years. So was it okay with God? Was God okay with it? No, of course he wasn't. Nehemiah knew that God was full of wrath because of what was going on there amongst his people. And Nehemiah knew that if a change did not take place immediately, then another period of captivity, and perhaps a permanent one, was a real possibility. And again, brethren, I'll just interject there and I'll say that, you know, I've been guilty of this too, you know. So, but I believe that that if we go into God's word, that he'll reveal to us what he wants here. And a lax approach to Sabbath keeping is not what he wants. So, again, you know, I've been guilty of that, and hopefully repented of it. Anyway, let's move on. What terminology did Nehemiah use for what was going on here? In verse 17 and verse 18, it referred to what they were doing as profaning God's Sabbaths. Now, we mentioned this before, I'll just run through it again, that the Hebrew word for profane and profaning is, I don't know whether it's shalal or kalal, is Strong's 2490. And it can also be translated as, now listen to these words, here's what they were doing to God's Sabbath, and here's what I've been doing to God's Sabbath too. Pollute, defile, break, wound, stain, desecrate, treat as common, violate the honor of, and the worst of all, prostitute. Again, brethren, please seriously consider these words when you think about your treatment of God's holy, sacred time, Sabbath and his holy days. Again, I want to repeat some questions and add some more to what I said before. Has God changed since Sinai? Has he changed since Nehemiah's time? Is his Sabbath time still holy or not? Has it been downgraded? Is it now permissible to break God's Sabbaths and holy days without God considering it to be profaned? Has the meaning of the term profane somehow been changed since then? And then, why would God cause this account to be recorded in his written word if he didn't want us to take it seriously and act upon it? After Nehemiah's dressing down of the Jewish nobles, he hadn't finished with them yet. Nehemiah did act upon it in a righteous way. Back in verse 17, we read that he testified against the sellers. He gave them strict warnings against continuing with what they were doing. And now he took even further action, practical action. Verse 19, and it came to pass that when the gates of Jerusalem began to be dark before the Sabbath, I commanded that the gates, there's those gates again, should be shut and charged that they should not be opened till after the Sabbath. And some of my servants set I at the gates, that there should no burden be brought in on the Sabbath day. Again, please remember Jeremiah's gates. To make sure that no goods could possibly be brought in for sale on the Sabbath, Nehemiah arranged for the city gates to be closed, barred, and guarded before sunset every what we call Friday evening, and then reopened again after sunset on what we call Saturday evening. Now, of course, he didn't have anything against legitimate buying and selling during the other 6 days of the week, so there was no problem with that. But after all this, after all of this action, did the Tyrian merchants begin to behave themselves? Verse 20. So the merchants and sellers of all kind of ware lodged without or outside of Jerusalem once or twice. So the answer is no. They did not begin to behave themselves. They camped outside the city walls and gates during the Sabbath hours, evidently waiting for an opportunity to get in and do business with the wayward Jews. They did this, Nehemiah tells us, once or twice, but we can assume that if he would have allowed it, they would have continued to do so on more occasions, obviously if they felt that they could have gotten away with doing so. But once again, Nehemiah took firm and proper action to stop them. Verse 21, "Then I testified against them and said unto them, Why lodge you about the wall? If you do so again, I'll lay hands on you. And from that time forth came they no more on the Sabbath." So Nehemiah warned them of arrest and imprisonment if they continued. So he took righteous action to keep holy the 24 hours that God had sanctified way back at creation. And please notice, Nehemiah had no fear, he had no problem at all with unifying God's holy law with the civil law. Verse 22, "And I commanded," this is Nehemiah again, "and I commanded the Levites that they should cleanse themselves." Come on, you guys, do your job, Levites. "That they should cleanse themselves and that they should come and keep the gates to sanctify the Sabbath day." And then he finishes this off with, "Remember me, O my God, concerning this also, and spare me according to the greatness of thy mercy." So Nehemiah instructed the Levites to take charge of the city gates so that these dangerously illegal practices should be prevented. Brethren, oh that we today in God's church, oh that we would rebuild strong walls around our household's keeping of God's holy Sabbath time. Oh brethren, oh that we today would keep the gates as they did. Oh that we would be actively protective of God's Sabbaths in our homes. And of course, oh, that we today had some government leaders like Nehemiah. On this last point, I would say this. If it was so, would some of our brethren complain? Mm-hmm. One day, brethren, these things will be reintroduced in the world tomorrow and properly enforced. And we have to ask ourselves, will some people complain then? I'm not going to go there, but there are prophetic scriptures that strongly indicate that there will be resistance to God's holy laws, even in the world tomorrow, in the millennium, both at the beginning of the millennium and at the end. Just briefly then, back to the world today. I've heard brethren give opinions that this Nehemiah account does not apply to us today. It doesn't apply to eating out at restaurants on God's Sabbath days, or brief shopping trips for emergencies. You know, emergencies like, we forgot the coffee cream, or I need to get a bottle of wine to take to somebody's house. I'm sorry, brethren, but I've done it. I've done it. And I'm sorry that I've done it. And opinions that this is referring only to doing the main shopping for food and that kind of thing. Some people say that there were no restaurants in Bible times, especially in the town markets. But if you look into historical and archaeological accounts, they very much prove that there were, that they did have that kind of fast food joint type of thing in those days. But even if it were true, even if they didn't have those things, look at the spirit of what's being said here. is there any real difference between shopping for food to take home or buying cooked food in a cafe or restaurant? If you look at the logic of it, a restaurant meal may be even more of a Sabbath violation, because as well as the monetary transaction and as well as the temporary employment of the person who takes your money, again, they're common to both stores and restaurants. In the case of restaurants, there's also the temporary employment and the prohibited work of the cooks and the waiters who prepare and serve the meal. Okay, I don't want to get into that anymore. But as we conclude this account in the book of Nehemiah, let's once more ask these very valid questions for the third time today. Well, let's add this to it, brethren. Is Jesus Christ the same yesterday, today, and forever? If Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever, let me ask these questions. Has he changed? Has he liberalized? Has he downgraded his Sabbath laws from the time they originally made them at creation? Has he changed them from the time that he cast them in stone at Mount Sinai? Has he changed them since he forbade the seething and baking during Sabbath hours? Has he changed them since he chastised the Israelites for gathering manna on his Sabbath days? Has he changed them since he instructed Moses to have a man executed for gathering firewood on his holy Sabbath day? And finally, has he changed them since the righteous judgment, action, and writing of Nehemiah? And brethren, in conclusion, if Yahweh did make such changes or downgrades, when, please tell me, did these changes take place, and where are they recorded in the scriptures?